This podcast is part of the Red 5 Network. For more Red 5 Network podcasts, visit red5network.com.
So what I told you was true, from a certain point of view.
Hello there. If you are looking for the From a Certain Point of View podcast, then these are the droids you're looking for. I'm Josh.
Did you just call me a droid?
Yeah, but I mean no offense because, okay. You know, I'm all for droid rights, just like, you know, okay. L3 and Solo.
Yeah. I'll have to come up with a... I'm Adam, by the way. I'll have to come up with a number designation that means Adam.
Yes. Yeah, we should.
I don't know how that would work.
Designations. That would be cool.
I'll have to think about that.
Adam, for some reason, I'm feeling deja vu today.
I will tell you why you're feeling that way.
I don't know why.
We recorded yesterday, and I went to edit it. Went to find the file. Found the file. There was only one. There should have been two. And plugged it into my editor, and whatever we recorded, there was like the first 5 seconds of it, and then the last 3 minutes of it. Everything else was gone. So the reason you're feeling deja vu is because this is the second time we're doing this in one weekend.
Now I get it. Thank you.
Also, I want to point out, we had our first guest ever that has passed up on us now.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, my wife was gonna fill in. Well, not fill in for me today, but she was gonna join me today on my end and just help and then, to make it not as repetitive, you know, since we already recorded this once. But then she dropped out last minute.
Said no.
Yeah, maybe we can get her again sometime. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll have to try to convince her, I guess.
Yeah, maybe we can get both our wives on for the same episode or something.
On my end of that, so
yeah,
maybe we'll have to keep on trying that.
So, what have you been up to watching? What have you been watching and playing this week, Adam?
I've been doing some reading this week, still trying to finish up Shadowfall. I'm getting close to finishing that up. I'll probably get it this week. But then also on Thursday evening, I got to go over and hang out with Ro from Scarif Scuttlebutt, also one of the co-founders of our network, the Red 5 Network. He was actually over way far east of us, but then on his way back through, he stayed the night, we're in Pennsylvania. He stayed the night right over the Ohio border. So I went over and we just had some drinks and sat around his hotel, had a little patio fireplace thing. So we just had a couple drinks and chatted about Star Wars and podcasts and, you know, life and family and all that stuff. So it was a great time.
That's awesome. I think it's super cool to get to meet people that in person that you've kind of just talked to online or seen online.
Yeah, it was just random, you know, just one of those happy little accidents that pop up and we're able to make it work. And I thought I'd have to wait for like a the next con or something to meet up with everybody, but it just happened to work out and I'm really glad it did. That was an awesome time.
Good to hear. I'm glad you got to do that.
What have you been up to, Josh?
Well, I guess, you know, I didn't say this yesterday because I hadn't watched it yet, but this morning I started season two of Cobra Kai. Oh, I love the show. It's so good. And I haven't started it yet.
I've thought about it. I just haven't started it yet. Yeah, I'd probably love it.
I mean, it feels like even though it takes place in the present day, like it feels like a show that comes out of the 80s. You know, it has a lot of 80s nostalgia and references to the other Karate Kid movies and everything. I never really got into Karate Kid, but I love the show.
I love Karate Kid. Yeah, it's one that I haven't like watched a ton, but I love Karate Kid, so I'd probably dig that.
It's making me definitely want to go back and watch Karate Kid because I never really sat down and watched them.
That's good. It's good stuff. I didn't even mind the remake with Jackie Chan and what's Will Smith's kid's name? Is it
Is it Jaden Smith?
Yeah, yeah. So I didn't mind that one even. I thought that was pretty good. So
yeah. And I, due to your recommendation, I've also been listening to the Matrix episodes by Pizza and Parsecs, and amazing. I've always thought, and I told you this. Very much. And I've always enjoyed thinking about the Matrix on a deeper level, philosophical level, religious level. But just hearing other perspectives on it and some other ideas that I never even thought of. And then, you know, they brought in Cam to talk about the music, and he just broke down like different notes and what they mean and why they were used by Don Davis,
incredible.
So cool. And then Force of Light was also on there. Natalie and Michelle talking about Christianity in the Matrix. So if you are a Matrix fan, I highly recommend listening to it. Split into a few different parts by Pizza and Parsecs.
Yeah, I would go so far as even to say, if you're not a huge Matrix fan, but just want to see like a really well done, like deep dive into a movie and themes and elements of, you know, what make up a meaningful movie like that, then still give this a try, because it's really, really well done.
Yeah, it's so well done. It's probably one of the better series of podcast episodes I've listened to in quite some time. So
yeah,
check it out.
Yeah, Dave and Liv did a great job there. And speaking of Dave and Liv and Cam and all that, I have to mention, you have to check out, not you, but everyone. I know you already did.
I need
to
finish.
If you haven't watched the debate, okay. If you haven't watched our debate that we did yesterday morning, Saturday morning. Oh boy, I haven't laughed that hard in a long, long time. And
you will laugh out loud.
I was in tears multiple times. Watched it again throughout the day yesterday, and even just kind of found some favorite parts of mine and watched them over and was laughing all over again. Even I would just go through the day just thinking about it and just start to laugh. It was such a fun time. And if you've been following us on Twitter, you know we've been passing back and forth the pineapple pizza debate, and then we found a few more topics to talk about. So it's a good time.
A few more toppings, if you will.
Toppings and yeah. And there's a nice little feel good twist at the end. So no spoilers, but check that out, because Cam and everyone just did an amazing job.
I really appreciated your attempts at moderating this thing. And I mean, and I'm sure it's completely coincidental that there are a lot of parallels between this particular debate and some debates we've had going on in the real world.
Yeah. Not entirely coincidental, we'll say that. I know. Yeah. I mean, we had some behind the scenes here, but we had some points like that we kind of wanted to hit, but a lot of it, most of it, I mean, I had questions written down, and like I said, there were some things that we wanted to touch on, and Cam had some ideas. But actually, like, what was said was all just ad-libbed, all off the cuff, and it was, I had so much fun. And
yes.
If you haven't watched it yet, you got to watch it. It's about an hour long, but it's worth every minute of it.
Definitely check it out. And taking a look at our poll from this week, our poll question was about video games, and it was, if you could create your own Star Wars video game, what would it be? And Adam and I shared our ideas last week, so we wanted to hear from you guys. And we had WSTR Media responded by saying, just give us Star Wars 1313. And Adam, I know mentioned that was what you thought about.
It is. I replied to them with that comment. But, you know, last week we talked about Knights of the Old Republic. But then as you posted that question, I was like, you know, 1313 came into my head. And I'm really glad they mentioned that, because that's a good call. I would love to see that, you know, multi-level Coruscant type of game.
Yeah, seeing
some underbelly stuff. Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be cool to explore that. We also had Hugo's Post podcast reply by saying Han Solo meets GTA Grand Theft Auto setting.
Yeah, that one made me laugh out loud.
That would be awesome. I mean, you know, I'm thinking like, you know, hijacking people's speeders and ships.
yeah, Yeah.
Like that.
I don't know if we'd ever, like, I don't know if Disney or Lucasfilm or whoever would have to say yes to that, would say yes to, like, a, just a fun game like that. Because it would be, I mean, GTA, if you're familiar with GTA at all, it gets a little, not a little, it gets very raunchy and violent and things like that. And even if it's not that level of thing, just to have a fun, funny type thing. I know even the Simpsons have done, like, a GTA style game. So if we could get something like that that's just pure fun in Star Wars, I think that would actually be a blast.
Definitely. It kind of reminds me of the question of, will Star Wars ever be rated R or anything like that? Kind of hope not, you know what?
Me either.
And I don't think it would ever go full GTA, but it'd be interesting.
That's why even something. The like I thought of, like, the Simpsons game I forget what it was called, but it was it was kind of like a GTA style. I think it was called Hit and Run, actually. It was kind of a GTA type game, but not like full, like, mature rating, you know.
We also had Camos Mills reply by with an image of Starkiller. Is there a first name for Starkiller, or was that his first name? I don't recall. Played by Sam Witwer.
Right.
The Force Unleashed. So looking at a sequel for the Force Unleashed games.
That was not his first name. Galen Merrick.
Oh, okay.
Was his name. So,
gotcha. So there's that. Quick. And then we had Anna Hayworth, who said a sequel for RC.
RC is Republic Commando, and that's a pretty cool game. It was, you know, title implies Republic Commando. You were a Republic trooper, clone trooper, and, you know, it was a very cool game. I think that's a good call. I would love to see that type of game again.
So thank you to all those who responded and gave your ideas for the next Star Wars video game you'd like to see if you could make one. So, Adam, what's coming up on this week's show?
Yeah, so we're coming back to Thank the Maker again. We've taken like a few weeks, maybe a month or two off from Thank the Maker. And we're coming back to it now, and we're going to be hitting up the sequel trilogy for the next 3 weeks, starting with, obviously, Force Awakens. So that's going to be today. But before that, we've got some news, some Mando news, and then some pretty cool book and comic news after that.
Absolutely. Well, I am excited to dive into the news today. Let's hit it.
Well, you want the bad news or the really bad news?
So this week, I don't think there's actually any bad news, so... You know, we're just going to talk about good news, Ahsoka.
So negative every week.
So negative. So we have some news on The Mandalorian. The Writers Guild of America website provided the list of writers for The Mandalorian Season 2. And that list includes Jon Favreau, Dave Filoni, and Rick Famuyiwa. That's my best attempt at saying that name.
In my opinion, you nailed it.
All right. Excellent. And we have, it looks like, Jon Favreau's penning 6 of those 8 scripts, Dave Filoni writing 1, and Rick Famuyiwa writing the other. So what are your thoughts on this news, Adam?
I was honestly a little surprised that Favreau took away 6 out of 8 episodes. Not that that's a bad thing. I'm not complaining at all. I trust Jon Favreau and what he writes and what he does on screen. I was just surprised it was that many.
Yeah, I was actually
glad to see that. You didn't have that many last year, right?
I'm not sure.
I thought there was a little more co-writing involved last year, but I could be wrong.
You might be right. Yeah. I'm not sure about the writing specifically.
But I might be crazy.
I didn't catch the reference, Adam. I'm sorry. Was that a reference?
Billy Joel song. Yeah.
Billy Joel. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, you may be right.
Gotcha. But yeah, I'm excited. Jon Favreau's writing the majority of these. I mean, that he's invested in this show, that it looks like he's going to stick around and be present and heavily involved. And Dave Filoni writing an episode, there's some speculation about that being maybe an Ahsoka episode, possibly, if the rumors are true. So yeah, I'd love to see that as well.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I think you spoke yesterday kind of about your confidence in the team that is behind the Mandalorian and their ability.
I did, and I am
to deliver.
I am that.
Yes.
Yeah. No. But seriously, yeah. No. I am, you know, like you mentioned, I'm very confident that what season two is going to be something pretty awesome. Mm-hmm. You know, there's been so many rumors about characters and all this other stuff. And, you know, honestly, whichever of those, if any, come true, I think we're in for a good season two, which is, you know, I'm basing that off of one season, but also basing it off of the people involved. And, you know, their quality of work and what they've done in the past and what they did last year. I really don't have any worries about this season. I'm very excited to just kick this thing off and get going.
Yeah. I mean, in fact, if they decided to like hand creative control of Star Wars kind of over to Filoni and
We've talked about that a little bit before, I think, but I would be totally on board for that. Yeah,
at least them being kind of like the Kevin Feige of Star Wars,
right?
I'd be like, yep, I'm good with that. Yeah. Do it.
Yeah.
So excited for season two. We are now, we're only about, I mean, 20
couple weeks
or 19 days away.
Yeah,
19 days away,
a little less than 3 weeks. Yeah,
it'll be here before we know it, and I cannot wait. We also had some Star Wars book news. Star Wars Books Facebook page released the 40 authors, 40 stories with The Empire Strikes Back from a Certain Point of View book that's coming out
on sale. The book that stole our name.
Yeah, they did. They did. Yeah. They took it right from us. We definitely came up with it first. But yeah, so we got some excerpts here from these different stories. Anything jump out at you?
Yeah, so there's a few that jumped out at me. First, that Obi-Wan story, and obviously I'm not going to go through these like word for word, or there's 40 of these things. But the Obi-Wan story, they kind of gave a little quote or like real quick synopsis of what you'll be, and along with the title. And Obi-Wan's quote was, you know, watching another Skywalker make a rash decision that could affect, you know, the course of the galaxy. And I thought that was a very interesting point for Obi-Wan to be thinking about. There's also a Yoda story again, which I'm super happy to see because I loved the Yoda story in the first From a Certain Point of View.
Absolutely.
There's a Rae Sloane story. I'm very excited for Rae Sloane. She's been popping up here and there after.
Yeah, I was very happy to see that too.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool. I'm very happy to see that.
Yeah, I always felt like that was a character that they could explore more in other stories.
Yeah.
And, you know, given her presence in the Aftermath trilogy.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad they are doing that. You know, we always talk about Star Wars is good when it's weird, but then we get stories like Wampas and Tauntauns, and
that's the stuff that really jumps out at me, surprisingly. Yeah, I don't know why, because I'm normally not a big creature person, you know, when it comes to Star Wars, but I'm excited to see these stories from their perspective.
Yeah, there were some interesting ones in the first one, but I don't know. I gravitate towards those stories about the characters, I think. So
yeah.
I'm sure that I'll read some of those about the creatures, and I'll know that, you know, I'll love them once I get there, but just not the ones that I'm like really jumping towards. So
I think that's fair. Another one that jumped out at me was Rogue Two.
Okay.
You know, just given the knowledge that we have now about Rogue One, I think it strikes a different chord now when I watch Empire Strikes Back, and you know that particular rebel is looking for Han and Luke, and he reveals that, you know, his code name is Rogue Two. So I'm wondering if they're going to somehow relate that to Rogue One. Maybe it pays homage to that, to the crew of Rogue One or something like that. So I think that'd be, and it's written by Gary Whitta, who was also a writer on Rogue One. So.
Yeah, definitely. And I wanted to mention that Ray Sloan story that I mentioned before is written by John Jackson Miller, and I'm excited for that. John Jackson Miller writes some more Star Wars. He's an excellent Star Wars author. So
awesome.
Should be lots of good stories, and I'm looking forward to it. That's November
10th.
Right? Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. So continuing in, book news, books and comics, we have some more news on Star Wars The High Republic. They released the opening crawl for what I'm guessing is just the event of the New Republic, or the High Republic, rather. And I'm sure this opening crawl, you mentioned yesterday when we recorded the first time that you expect to see this in the first novel.
Light of the Jedi. Mm-hmm. I think it'll kick things off, and I don't think it'll be plastered on every title. Comics have always kind of had like their little crawl at the beginning, mm-hmm. And some of the novels have too, but the comics have always had like a little crawl, and usually they're somewhat similar from issue to issue with a little few changes just to kind of remind you where we've been. So I think the comics will kind of do something like that. They'll maybe have something similar to this, or maybe this right off the bat, but I think it'll be on Light of the Jedi, and then if the rest of them have it, I think it'll be like a little different. I think it'll be adjusted a little bit,
sure, to
fit the story, the actual story.
And when I saw this, Adam, I kind of felt like this is an opening crawl for this whole new era. Basically, it's introducing this era in Star Wars, where so many stories and different mediums can come from this time period. And I'm also excited to read the opening crawl. Now, here's the thing. My wife, Brittany, she normally reads all the opening crawls for the movies when we watch them. And had she recorded with us today, I would have given her the opportunity to read this opening crawl, but she missed out on her chance. So I am going to read an opening crawl finally.
Go for it.
Ready for it?
Yeah.
All right. So Star Wars The High Republic. The galaxy is at peace, ruled by the glorious Republic and protected by the noble and wise Jedi Knights. As a symbol of all that is good, the Republic is about to launch Starlight Beacon into the far reaches of the Outer Rim. This new space station will serve as a ray of hope for all to see. But just as a magnificent renaissance spreads throughout the Republic, so does a frightening new adversary. Now the guardians of peace and justice must face a threat to themselves, the galaxy, and the Force itself.
Awesome.
Thoughts? Any thoughts on this opening crawl?
That noble and wise Jedi line stuck out to me right away. Mm-hmm. Because I love that description of the Jedi. And I thought that was really cool. I think we're in for a time period where the Jedi are, what they were meant to be. And, kind of not have forgotten what they were meant to be, maybe. So I'm very excited for that.
That will be really cool to see the Jedi in that light. And
I see what you did there.
Yes. But the first thing
did you mean to do really, that? Because that was pretty good.
It kind of not. Kind of came to me, and then I was
You just gotta say yes when I ask that.
Yes, that was intentional.
Brilliant.
So the first thing about this opening crawl for me is that it just feels so Star Wars to me. And I think I love opening crawls. I love that it's a part of this, and that it just feels like Star Wars. But this Starlight Beacon and the idea of this space station being a ray of light as opposed to like the Death Star 1 and Death Star 2 being this kind of very threatening dark side type of thing. So it's interesting that this base station is more of a ray of hope, as it says here. So I'm curious to see what that means. And then just that this new adversary, and it's this Renaissance period that stood out to me too, kind of Renaissance, but also this new adversary being a threat to the Force itself. I'm really curious about that and how they're is going to be kind of a threat to the Force. I mean, will it somehow take Force abilities away or something like that? Or, what's that going to be? So I'm excited
to
see what that means.
Speaking of that disaster, our next bit of news was a panel from the New York Comic Con that went into a lot more detail about what we're going to be seeing in the High Republic. And they talked a lot about the Great Disaster. You know, we've heard a lot about it, but we started to learn a little bit more about what that's going to look like. So basically, what happens is, and I'm going to encourage you all to check out the panel from New York Comic Con, because hearing these authors talk about this in their own words means a lot more than the drivel that I'm about to spew. But but basically what happens in this disaster is that a cargo vessel, the Legacy Run, collides with an object in hyperspace, and then basically everything that it's carrying, along with debris and everything else, are shot through the galaxy at light speed. Basically it causes hazards for everything around it, including planets, and you know, as that stuff is spread out through the galaxy at light speed, you know, at, you know, really random trajectories and everything, causes a lot of issues for planets and things like that. So that's really what we're looking for here, that initial, you know, that initial event that sends us on our adventure here leads to, you know, really citizens of the Republic crying out for help, and that's kind of what we're going to be seeing going on here. Beyond just the Great Disaster, authors including Kevin Scott, Justina Ireland, and Claudia Gray, Daniel Jose Elder, and a few others chatted a lot about their characters. Even Avar Chris, they talked about some of their connections to the Force. Avar Chris has this musical connection to the Force, with which I think is very interesting, like what she senses in the Force through other, you know, with other people. When she senses them, it comes off as like different songs, with even different instruments and things like that. So I thought that was very interesting. Some have, you know, very strong connections to the Force and are, you know, feeling gifted. Like Justina Ireland talked about her character. Let me see if I can pronounce this right. Vernestra Rowe, I believe. It's basically like a prodigy. You know, she's 16, but she's very strong with the Force. And then she is worried about, you know, living up to that. Other characters don't have that connection. They feel like they have to work harder to get where they're at compared to other Jedi. So it seems like we're going to have a lot of different new characters here. Very interesting to see how they all mesh and work together. So
Like there's some real depth to the characters as well.
Yeah, definitely. And then the other big piece of news we got is that next summer, the second wave of High Republic books is coming, with the second book in the series written by Kevin Scott. So that's going to be cool. Very excited for that. And, you know, maybe the good thing about this being delayed from August to January is that we have less time to wait between books, at least for the first two waves. So,
yep.
So, yeah, very cool stuff there.
I'm looking forward to checking out the panel because I haven't watched it yet. So I'm looking forward to, I will definitely do that.
Yeah. And I encourage everyone out there to check. It's only like 20, 25 minutes somewhere in there. So it's not like too time consuming. But yeah, definitely check it out.
All right. So we are going to return to thank the maker, Force Awakens. And I guarantee that this oil bath is going to feel so good.
Thank the maker. This oil bath is going to feel so good.
It did feel so good. So we are back to Thank the Maker. This is going to be the first Thank the Maker series that we have done that we're not actually thanking George Lucas, because, you know, we had the prequels and then we had the originals. And, you know, now we're moving on to the sequels when George has sold off Lucasfilm. And, you know, now we're going to be talking to some other makers as well. And
indeed.
Some of the sources I used to get this conversation going were The Secrets of the Force Awakens, A Cinematic Journey, which was kind of the behind the scenes of Force Awakens. It was included on the Blu-ray and DVD and my digital copy. And then also checked out audio commentary, which was actually just JJ talking about his movie for 2.5 hours, which is pretty cool. So, you know, the thing that the Secrets of the Force Awakens led off with was really kind of the three main returning legacy characters, the actors, Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, and Harrison Ford, talking about what they felt, you know, when this all went down, you know, the selling of Lucasfilm to Disney, and then we find out that we're getting more movies, and then those characters are coming back, and they want to do more with those, and, you know. Mm-hmm. So Mark Hamill mentioned how surprised he was, and he actually said that he, you know, part of him didn't want to do it because he felt like he had a good beginning, middle, and an end, and he, you know, didn't even really see what he could add to it at this point. Carrie Fisher, in classic Carrie Fisher style, said, you know, she was surprised. You know, we waited this long, and she said she looked better 10 years ago. We could have done it back then. And then Harrison Ford, also in classic Harrison Ford, just saying, at the end of the first three films, I had not thought whatsoever to revisit the character. So,
and I'm sure he sounded grumpy when he said this quote, I feel.
Oh, yeah.
I guarantee he was grumpy.
Yeah, probably. And then,
but I'm so glad he came back.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And he got what he wanted in some ways, too. Mm-hmm. So that's good. Yep. But anyway, JJ then talked about, and some of this is interesting looking back on this, you know, where we are in time right now, going back to see where this all started, because JJ talked about, you know, you don't realize working on a Star Wars movie, just how daunting that can be. And then we know how Force Awakens was received, and then he came back to do Rise of Skywalker and how that was, you know, received. Mm-hmm. You get some interesting, almost like double meanings in watching some of this now. And you know, that's one of them. And I'll talk about a little bit more of it later.
Right.
But then George Lucas was the next big part of this, because, you know, the story starts there. George selling this, you know, the franchise. And I thought this quote was very interesting, and you know, we talked with Conversations on their show, and kind of we talked about this a little bit. But he said that when I first made Star Wars, there was a lot of people in Hollywood that said this is a movie that Disney should have made, which is a really interesting quote, because you know, now it's Disney making these movies.
I feel like it was almost Star Wars' destiny to end up with Disney. Yeah. I wonder if, like, you know, George Lucas had dreams where Darth Vader was kind of saying, you must sell the company to Disney. It is your destiny, you know, type of thing. I do a horrible voice impression, but, you know, I think it was almost destiny for it to land there.
Yeah, it fits, you know, it fits. We talked about that on Conversations, so we'll make everyone go over there and listen to their show with us and, you know, for more details about what we think about that. Yes. You know, Kathleen Kennedy talked about one of the first people she thought of bringing back actually was Lawrence Kasdan, and it was nice seeing Lawrence Kasdan in there and talking about this. And, you know, I remember back then, you know, when we found out about that was one of the things that it didn't really like set my mind at ease, because I was super excited for this. I wasn't worried about it. But it kind of made me feel like, okay, this is actually real. This is like Star Wars, you know, you know, with Kasdan, you know, doing Empire and, you know, working with Jedi. And then now he's back in Episode 7. That was like, okay.
Yeah. I think it was important to have somebody that was linked with the original trilogy to come back and work on this one, because they really wanted it to feel like the original trilogy again.
Yeah.
You know, in various ways. And Lawrence Kasdan is a great writer. And
yeah,
it shows.
Yeah. And JJ gushed about working with him and how much fun he had working with Larry, as he called him.
I think one of the interesting things too, sorry to interrupt.
No, you're fine. Awesome.
One of the interesting things about the conversations between JJ and Lawrence Kasdan was JJ wanted to explain a lot of things. I remember seeing this in one of the documentaries but Lawrence Kasdan would tell him, like, you don't need to explain everything. You know, you can let the audience fill in some of those gaps and details. And even though the audience maybe didn't respond to that as well, I think he's right about that. You know, you don't need to use so much dialogue and so much, you know, trying to think of the word.
Exposition.
Exposition. That's it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe we'll have to put a pin in that idea for a couple weeks from now. Getting back to kind of those moments in this documentary, or, you know, audio commentary, where you kind of think how different times were 6 years ago. Mm-hmm. JJ talking to Daisy and John, he's really like almost like triple checking with him, like, you sure you really want to do this? And this is when they already found out that, you know, they were cast. John said that, you know, JJ told him he was the new star of Star Wars, which is what kind of sunk in for him. But, you know, he's asking if they're ready for it, you know, if they're ready for this type of thing. This is really the biggest thing easily that they've done in their career at this point. And just, you know, they're so excited. They're so, like, you know, back then they're so ready to go. And, you know, then you fast forward 6 years or 7 years, whatever it is at this point, and, you know, it's very different.
Now it's like they don't want to have anything to do with it.
Yeah, yeah, it's very different, you know, quotes coming out of them now. So,
yes, for sure.
Sad and, you know, kind of.
Yeah. I mean, being in a big franchise like that can do that to you if, you know, if it's not widely supported by the fandom. You know what I mean? It can take a toll because of fan reactions and everything.
Yeah, for sure. But then I have to talk about this moment, and watching this in the documentary was super cool, because the script reading is just one of my favorite memories in Star Wars. Nothing that even happened on screen, but you know, getting ready to see these movies be made, and then all of these people are sitting around this like warehouse and this like furniture that was just kind of pushed into a circle, and, you know, there's Mark and Carrie and Harrison, and then, you know, we got our new characters there. We've got, you know, Daisy and John and Oscar, and then we got Andy Serkis sitting there, and, you know, we both love Lord of the Rings, and we see Andy Serkis mm-hmm. as part of this, and it's like seeing them all in that circle and those pictures, I'll never ever forget that. And that was such a cool time to be a Star Wars fan.
Yeah, I loved the black and white image of that and everything, and it definitely had, I agree, it had that effect on me that it did on you. It just created this excitement and this wonder of this new cast, this new story. Mm-hmm. Where is it going to go, the possibilities, you know? It's just a very exciting time to be a fan.
Yeah. And then the other cool part of this documentary is kind of seeing Mark Hamill part of that, because he was reading the script, and, you know, not like the dialogue, but he was reading like this, you know, the in between and the setups and all that stuff. He said that, you know, usually the director is the one that reads all that stuff, but JJ asked him, JJ, I guess he said something like he had to, you know, do other things or watch for other things, or that, you know, mm-hmm. but really, I think it's when you have Mark Hamill that can sit down and read something like the opening crawl to your movie for a Star Wars movie. I think you just have to do that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I love the fact that he read the script at this script reading. It was just fantastic.
Yeah. You talked a little bit earlier about, you know, how wanting this to feel like Star Wars. And so one of those things, it was kind of the locations that they shot, and, you know, Abu Dhabi was probably the biggest on location thing that they did for this movie. Just like Tunisia, it was hot, you know, mm-hmm. Miserable. They all mentioned that, you know, John Boyega in his stormtrooper suit, and, you know, talking about getting iced down and just water and all this other stuff. But then there was also a lot of running, and you think about the scenes that they filmed there, you know, through the scavenger village and all that, you know, where Daisy and John are just bolting through there to get away from stormtroopers and TIE fighters and all this other stuff. Daisy mentioned, you know, the training, that she didn't think that she'd be able to get through this whole thing without the training that she, you know, experience to get her into that shape.
Yeah, I mean, I love when with these types of films, when the actors actually go through the training and they do a good portion of the stunts or most of the stunts themselves, I think it makes a huge difference, you know, and it just adds to the believability of it.
Yeah. And speaking of that, they talked about how almost everything in Abu Dhabi was like in camera. You know, there was very little CG there. And if there was CG, most of the time it was taking things out and not adding things in. There were some things that they did add in. There's a scene on a sunset where you see Ray's speeder going across the sunset. That speeder was painted in, but the sunset was real. Mm-hmm. But then everything else was taken out. You know, Ray's speeder again was a practical effect, but they had to take the wheels out because, you know, we don't have floating speeders. So they had, no, not yet. So they took the wheels out, but then everything else was CG. That was the only CG. Everything else was practical. So, you know, you talk about that believability on screen, and I think that's it. All those characters, real costumes, even Ankar Plutt, which, you know, we probably all know at this point that was Simon Pegg from, you know, Star Trek and then a bunch of other things.
A good friend of JJ's and a good friend of JJ's.
Yeah, definitely. Even Ankar Plutt was real. They did mention that they had to like paint his face up digitally later because the makeup and the heat didn't mix so well. All those characters that you see there, it's all practical. They're puppets. That bird that's pecking at the metal, you know, that's a puppet. You know, that's not CG. That's a puppet. All that stuff is just like you mentioned, things that just make you believe it a little bit more.
Yeah, I mean, you know how much I love practical effects and location shooting and all. I just think it makes a huge difference, and you can tell with the end product, you know.
And then even when they aren't location shooting, the next part that they mentioned was going back to Pinewood Studios, which if you think back to when we talked about 4, 5, and 6, the originals, that, you know, a lot of the stuff was done in Pinewood, and they go back to there, and they mentioned how a lot of the crew that worked there had family that worked on the originals, which is, it felt like a homecoming for them. That was a really cool little fact.
Yeah, for sure.
And then getting into some story stuff, Poe was supposed to die early on. We might have talked about this in the show before. I really forget.
I think we have, yeah.
Yeah. But then Oscar had a string of movies where he died in the first, you know, few minutes. They really didn't want to do that again. JJ wanted to get him in this movie. And so, you know, kind of thought about reworking the script so that he could live. And Michelle Redwan was actually one of the ones that was like, you know, we need to do that. You know, Poe can come back. It might be obvious or expected, you know, that, you know, he has that triumphant return after he disappears for a while. But she said, you know, that's a happy thing. You know, that's something that you cheer for. So, you know, they were, you know, that's kind of maybe the extra push I think that JJ needed to get Poe back in that movie. You know, and then we go on to get him into more movies, and a lot of what we know about the sequels is that.
I'm actually surprised that the early version of the script or, you know, whatever, had him dying early on, just because then you take away those kind of like three main characters that you had, original trilogy. You had, you know, Han, Luke, and Leia. Mm-hmm. I don't think you would have had that had Poe died, unless there was some other character they were going to introduce. But
he becomes such a staple in the next two movies too. You know, he's so important, sure. I think, in the next two movies, and for a character that wasn't even going to be there.
Mm-hmm.
So
yep.
Captain Phasma was actually based on some early drawings of Kylo Ren, but, you know, JJ didn't think he looked right in silver, kind of wanted him to be black, and didn't really want him to look like a stormtrooper either. But the thing about that drawing was, you know, JJ kind of really took to it. He thought that could be like a leader of the stormtroopers. Kathy Kennedy was, you know, really taken by it as well. And when you see that early concept art of, you know, what was Kylo Ren back then, but became Captain Phasma, it's really striking, you know. And in JJ, I've never seen the movie Phantasm. I don't know if you have or not.
I haven't.
But that name Phasma actually comes from Phantasm, you know, kind of one of JJ's, you know, naming Easter egg things that he likes to do. But yeah, it came from Phantasm. I guess there's some type of like silvery part of, you know, character or object in that movie. And that's where Phasma comes from.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that such a cool looking character was kind of underutilized, in my opinion, at least, you know.
Yeah, yours and mine both.
Yeah, could have been a little bit more to the character for sure.
Yeah, 100%. You know, one of the things I think that The Force Awakens definitely gets flack for that I've never agreed with is how sometimes it's very similar to A New Hope, and it is. I can't deny that, but then hearing JJ talk about, you know, some of the ideas behind that really kind of clicked for me, even though it didn't bother me. It just kind of like reinforced me, I guess. He really looked at Star Wars like a Western. And, you know, we've heard that before. We've heard people talk about how, you know, Star Wars being a Western or having those influences. And when you think about a Western, you have these like recurring prime locations. You have things like saloons, you know, you have these towns, you have these deserts, you have that type of thing. You think about fantasy movies, you have like, you know, you have castles, you have, you know, princesses, you have all these other things that keep coming back. And so he felt in, you know, Star Wars, he'd have things like cantinas or space stations. And so, you know, then we get things like Maz's Castle or Starkiller. It really clicked for me to hear it that way, I think. Even though it never really bothered me.
For sure. I mean, it's not something that's ever bothered me either. I actually enjoy those similarities. I enjoy those callbacks and those beats repeating. I like the recurring themes in Star Wars and the rhyming that George did intentionally in a lot of ways with the prequels and the original trilogy. And then that kind of continues in the sequel trilogy. So, you know, even though it is criticized for that, I actually quite enjoy those similarities myself.
Yeah. So Maz's Castle ends up being, you know, the cantina scene without really being a cantina. And, you know, JJ talked about how castles just kind of, you know, feel more exciting. It feels like there's more of a history there. There's more of a story to be told. You know, so we get, instead of a cantina, we get Maz's Castle, which I thought was a you know, pretty cool spin on that.
Yeah, certainly. And I mean, especially the fact that this kind of mysterious kind of like, I don't know if it's like a almost a catacomb or basement type area.
Yeah, right.
Underneath. Where Rey's, well, where the Skywalker lightsaber was, you know,
Rey's?
Yes, Rey's lightsaber.
I'm not going to do that again.
So it's just very intriguing, you know, and adds a little something more to the location.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Maz herself was actually based on one of JJ's high school teachers, which I thought was very interesting. And you know, he named her who his teacher was back in the, you know, that time. And, you know, when you look at this, they show pictures of her, and we look at her and Maz side by side, it's almost like, I forget who actually made Yoda, but it's almost kind of like those back and forth pictures of like, here's Yoda, here's the guy that made Yoda. And they're like almost the same.
How similar they actually looked.
Right. And, you know, it's kind of the same way with Maz. And you know, to hear JJ kind of gush about his teacher, about, you know, she was this, you know, older lady, but very wise and very kind and, you know, that type of thing. It made sense why Maz, I think, has a little more weight to see that that was, you know, because it was based on that person in JJ's life. The other big thing that happens on Takodana is that, you know, Starkiller fires on Hosnian Prime. And, you know, JJ addressed that right off the bat because he said, you know, detractors of this movie will say space doesn't work like that, you know, with the light moving through space, that type of thing. But the thing that he said was that The Force Awakens is not a science lesson. And that quote stuck with me. And maybe because we'll have to talk about this again in greater depth next week.
Yeah, I mean, we don't necessarily have in Star Wars the same type of physics and science as our world, and I don't really think.
Yeah,
and Right. Yeah, and I mean, some people get stuck on those types of details. Like, I remember it was a celebration, and somebody at that celebration, it might have even been the lead up to The Force Awakens, asked JJ, you know, are you going to address kind of some of the things in Star Wars that happen in space, like there's sounds in space when there really shouldn't be. It was something like that. And JJ was like, no. And that was his response. Right. No, he doesn't care about that stuff.
I remember, you know, right after the movie came out, with people like, I remember it was Neil deGrasse Tyson said, you know, BB-8 can't work that way because he can't roll on sand. Like, I don't, I really honestly don't care. So you know, cool. Like if that's what you're taking to Twitter to say after this movie comes out, just I don't.
You're kind of missing.
I don't care. It's just for fun, you know. Mm-hmm. But then I never thought about this. But it's true. This is the first movie where on set they used actual light up lightsabers. You know, kind of like we have. Instead of sticks or wood or metal or anything like that, you know, they're using actual light up lightsabers, and you get that more real world light effects and how objects react to light. It's mentioned on Takadana, you know, because Rey and Kylo face off, and Kylo's, you know, kind of threatening Rey with his lightsaber, and you see how the red reflects on her skin, but then you see it again in glorious detail on Starkiller when you know the blue and the red in the woods, and how that reflects with the trees and the snow and all that. It's just amazing.
It's very noticeable in that scene with the lightsaber duel, and I love the lighting effects that you get from that on the characters' faces, for sure.
Yeah. We mentioned Andy Serkis earlier, but we got to talk more about Andy Serkis because I love Andy Serkis. He was actually really started as a motion capture consultant in this movie. And JJ had mentioned that he got to watch an early copy of Planet of the Apes, where Serkis plays Caesar the ape, and how impressed he was with Andy's performance in that movie. But then he ended up coming in to play Snoke instead of just being a consultant, and which was pretty cool because the stuff that he can do, not just in motion capture, but with his voice is just incredible.
Yeah, absolutely.
He goes from playing this like squeaky Gollum character, and then he just has this rumble that when he lets that thing go, it's frightening, just like chills and all that.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm sure we might get into it more next week, but his performance in The Last Jedi as Snoke is actually, it's like terrifying in parts, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's just so good.
Yeah, he's that way with his voice. It's so good.
And that's my daughter.
Hi, Sydney.
We didn't get my wife on this week, but we got Sydney on.
That's cool.
You going to say hi to everybody, Sid? Do you like Star Wars? Who's your favorite character? Yeah. Always a good answer.
Always Baby good answer. Yoda. That's awesome.
All right. Well, thanks for your guest spot here in our show. I'll be down soon, okay?
That's awesome. Andy Serkis for the scene, the Holo scene, which is one of those scenes that... I wasn't a huge fan of that Holo scene.
Me neither. It threw me off the first time I saw it.
It really does. His size.
I didn't realize it was a Holo at first, and I thought, like, this creature like 20 feet tall, or what's?
Yeah, it looks very different from a regular Holo that we're used to. You know, Holos are usually more blue, and there's a more static, and you know, they kind of fade in and out a little bit. He almost looks solid at some points, and it was very, very striking and kind of difficult to process. So still one of my least favorite scenes in how, you know, that was done. But anyway, seeing how they completed that scene, because, you know, this is one of those scenes where the Holo is like huge, you know, like Palpatine in episode 5 huge, but even bigger, honestly. They had Andy Serkis up on this platform, like 20, 25 feet in the air. And then he's actually speaking through a microphone, so that, you know, through that room as they're recording, and his voice is just you know, filling that room. And you have Adam Driver and Don Mogleason down below, and you know, they have to look up so they have an actual frame of reference to look at. And, you know, just kind of the way they did that was impressive. I guess we have to talk about Han Solo's death, right?
Yeah, I mean, for sure.
I really liked how Adam Driver talked about being a part of that. You know, he said he was excited. It was something he was excited to, to be working on. But then he also had this feeling he wanted to avoid this as much as possible. And, I know that feeling. I'm sure you've had that feeling. You're excited for something, but then as it gets closer and closer, you're kind of like dreading it almost, you know? I'm sure you know how that feels.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. And, you know, I think as much as this moment is just something that is terrible for the fans to experience, I think it's something that, you know, I think a lot of us probably saw it coming, you know, and especially thinking of Harrison Ford's comments about wanting his character to die actually in the original trilogy, to give more weight to that character. I think he felt that Han Solo's character in the originals was kind of a surface level type of character. And I think he kind of wanted something more out of that character.
And
he definitely gets that here with The Force Awakens.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. This is one of those things where they, you know, definitely kept as few people on the set as possible. This is one of those big secret type things. But then JJ talked about, you know, he felt that this was a necessary component for this story, that this isn't just the Force Awakening in a young girl, but it's also the Dark Side Awakening, too.
Yeah, I love that kind of explanation of the title, The Force Awakens. You know, the first time I saw it, first couple times, I never thought about The Force Awakening in Kylo Ren on the dark side. I always thought of it more as Rey, you know.
Yeah, right. And you know, we'd be remiss if we didn't mention BB-8 in this.
You'll probably notice that BB-8 is now missing behind me. He actually, Poe called, and he had a secret mission for him. The Resistance needed him, so that's where he is right now.
Gotcha. But There was a few different versions of BB-8 that they used in this movie. There was a remote controlled version, and then there's like the one that they used the most, which was actually a puppet, which was on a rod with a human controlling it. The human was obviously later painted out. But you can kind of see with that puppet version how much of a personal touch it adds, because, you know, you look close, you kind of see he doesn't just roll straight. He kind of wobbles as he rolls, and you picture like a person behind him walking, and so you get that wobble from the person walking. But it just added so much more of a human element to that droid, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so impressed with BB-8. I mean, the fact that they were able to create this droid that could be moved remotely like that blew my mind. But also, yeah, them using him in different ways to get that emotion, to get that human element out of the character. And this is, you know, BB-8's my favorite droid, I'm not gonna lie. I mean, I love R2 and C-3PO and so many of the other droids, but BB-8 is just my favorite. For that droid really landed with me when I saw the Force Awakens. Yeah. And definitely so.
Yeah, and you mentioned the remote control one, how cool that was. And you know, that technologically speaking, that's so cool, because you have not just a rolling droid, it's a big ball, but then you have the head on top of it.
Right.
And it's not just something you see on screen, you know, it's not just a special effect. They made real ones of these. You know, they made ones that actually do that.
And I mean, when that thing came rolling through at Celebration leading up back before The Force Awakens, that just, I think it was that Celebration.
Yeah.
Just blew my mind that they actually had this. It was like the droid is alive and it's there. You know, I mean, it was crazy.
Right, right. And, you know, we have to talk about the Falcon too, because the Falcon, seeing that Falcon back, that garbage back in the movie is something. It's what, you know, this is Star Wars, you know. And I mean, that thing, it wasn't a green screen thing, you know, that they built that Falcon, that Falcon was there, but it's also huge, you know? So when you see it on parked in the scenes, like in Takadana or Dakar or even Octo, that's actually all the same. They haven't moved the Falcon. They've added maybe some trees around it. They've, you know, digitally painted this around it. But it's all parked in the same place, and they just adjusted the look.
That is a fun fact. I actually didn't know that.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's cool.
Yeah. I mean, I love the Falcon. I think my most exciting moment at Galaxy's Edge was getting to step on that thing, and you're right, it's huge. I mean, seeing it in person is really cool. I can't wait for you to get to experience that.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Because I know you're going to love it.
I can't wait too. And John Boyega talked about that, you know, walking onto this thing, it's really there. And, you know, he talked about running through it and, you know, picking up the training droid and just picking up all these little, pieces of the set, that they added to this thing and running and just messing everything up and, you know, just acting like a kid in this thing, you know, and then they show Harrison Ford walking back in and for first time in decades into the cockpit, you know, that's special stuff.
Absolutely. I love those moments. When you get to see that behind the scenes stuff and see him stepping on there again.
Yeah. It's
fantastic.
So the ending of this movie on Octo is, you know, maybe one of the only times in Star Wars that a movie like this really ends on a cliffhanger like it does, you know?
Yeah.
And
I love it.
It's It's
my favorite ending in a Star Wars.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's a striking scene that was filmed in on an island in Scotland. And
Michael.
Yep, and that's an old, like, 6th to 7th century, I believe they said, monastery. Those steps are really there, you know.
Yep.
They were only allowed, like, 50-some people on this island to film at a time. That's including crew and actors and everything, so they couldn't make any changes to the island. It was literally just cameras and, you know, that's all they could really do. So, you know, that's all there. That's all real. Just a very striking scene. Mark talked about, you know, being on that island. He mentioned only two times that he felt this feeling. One was in Tunisia, and the other was standing on top of this island, where he felt like he was just on a different planet, you know?
Right.
And Octo has that feel.
It does. I love that planet. And it's a perfect place for a Jedi master who's hiding to be, and then to train another Jedi. I mean, I love Octo.
Yeah. And then we end with, you know, the lightsaber scene. Rey's handing the lightsaber, or trying to hand off the lightsaber. And you know, Mark Hamill just talks about that scene and how he feels, how he interprets that at the end of this movie. You know, how he thinks that Luke is just very conflicted about this whole thing. We find out later that he's really not that conflicted. But, you know, but I guess that's something we can dive into deeper next week.
Yeah, well, I mean, I remember being so excited to see what was going to happen after that moment. And just that handoff, that exchange that could be taking place there, and what Luke's reaction would be. And, you know, of course, it wasn't what I expected when I saw The Last Jedi. Just that ending moment of The Force Awakens.
Yeah, it's incredible.
I mean, I don't know if I've ever felt anything like that leaving a movie theater.
I don't know that I've ever felt a lot of things about any movie or any series that I felt during The Force Awakens. Force Awakens is easily my favorite of the sequels. I love The Force Awakens. I loved how exciting that was leading up to it. I loved how invested I was after it. And I hope one day I feel that level of excitement again, you know, because it was just, it's not normal. That wasn't normal Star Wars excitement. And I don't know if it was just penned up from 10 years of you know, no films, but I haven't felt that for anything. And I hope I get to feel that again soon. Because that I'm was with an incredible you. I mean, time.
It made me feel like a kid again, and yeah. I couldn't wait to see what was next. I think I would call The Force Awakens a nearly perfect Star Wars film. It just brought back that feeling of Star Wars again. Think about how many theories and how much speculation and discussions that movie created.
Not many.
just a couple.
Yeah. So, there's one or two.
Yeah. So The Force Awakens definitely has definitely a very important place in my heart.
Yeah. Agreed. So that gets us to the end of this. And I guess that we'll be able to lead into our discussion next week with The Last Jedi.
Yeah. I mean, and I, once again, we are just here to thank the makers, thank everybody that was involved with The Force Awakens, J.J. Abrams, the cast and crew, you know, Lawrence Kasdan. Thank you so much for creating such an awesome Star Wars movie, returning us to Star Wars again.
Indeed. You ready to wrap up episode 49?
Yes, I am.
I'm just glad you're here.
Thank you everyone for tuning in once again. Remember to subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app. If you're on one that lets you leave a review like iTunes or Podchaser, leave us a review. That helps us get out to more people. It helps us know what to do better or to keep doing or to change. We have actually a good bit of programming updates this week too that I want to pass along. So, you know, like you already know, obviously, we started Thank the Maker again this week, which means for the next 2 weeks, we'll be talking about Last Jedi and then The Rise of Skywalker. Then that leads us into Halloween, and we're going to have a little spooky Star Wars show for Halloween, talk about some of the more creepy aspects of Star Wars, maybe. And then after that, we've been doing this show for a year now, so we're going to have an anniversary show the first week of November, which is kind of crazy. But yeah, this is our... Yeah, me too. And we're going to talk about, you know, where we've been through the first year, some of the things we talked about, how that turned out, and then what we're looking forward to in year two. We had a giveaway a couple weeks ago in episode 47. All you had to do to enter that giveaway was to comment on our YouTube video for episode 47, and you were entered to win a Mandalorian and Child t-shirt along with a set of Topps trading cards from the trailer for this second season of Mandalorian. The winner of that giveaway was the our good friend, the now pineapple pizza loving Cam Ray. Congratulations on a debate well played yesterday, Cam, and congratulations on the giveaway as well. Josh, are you... Well, you're aware of this now because of yesterday, but I'm actually going to start a Mandalorian rewatch because, like we mentioned earlier, that's coming on October 30th. But starting on October 2nd, one episode a night, we're going to have kind of a live chat in some form or fashion. That's going to start on the 22nd. One episode a night will take us up to the 30th for the launch of season two, release of season two.
Fun.
Next week, tune in for more details on that. We'll let you know where to go and, you know, where to follow and where to check it all out. So, but that will be coming starting the 22nd. Remember to check out our website from certainpointofview.com where we have blog articles. You can get contact information so you can send us questions or show topics or anything like that. There's also links to all of our socials, which happen to be Instagram, certainpovpod. Twitter is also Certain POV Pod. Facebook is From a Certain Point of View. Discord server links are in the show notes and on the website. Our email address is certainpovpod@gmail.com. And we are hosted by Anchor, where you can leave us a 60-second voicemail if you have any questions about the show or any anything you want to add about Force Awakens or anything else we've talked about in the last 48 episodes, all fair game. Leave us a voicemail. We'd love to play it. Remember to check out red5network.com. We mentioned a few shows throughout this episode, actually. There's so many great shows on the Red 5 Network. Not not just focusing on Star Wars. You know, we talked about pizza and parsecs, talking about Matrix. You know, there's all kinds of different content on the Red 5 Network. So check out red5network.com for all of those shows. You can find me on the internet on Twitter at TheGauze85. I'm also on Instagram at TheGauze85. Josh, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at JediJarJar1722. And I just wanted to thank everyone once again for joining us this week for the From a Certain Point of View 49th episode. And we're looking forward to number 50. Next week, we'll be halfway to 100, if my math's correct. Yeah, so thank you. Is that right? Did I get that math?
Yeah, okay. You got it.
I'm not the best at math, but that one it was okay. So anyhow, just remember that today, everything we said, including that math problem, was true.
From a certain point of view.